Digital 410 Productions proudly presents the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast with your hosts, Dodd Abernathy, Jeff Copsetta, and Henry Sledge.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, your favorite World War II based podcast. And despite all the craziness going on in the world, I'm sure everybody who listens to this podcast is up to date with what's going on around the world. And so we're not even going to try to compete with all the other outlets out there. So instead, for the next hour and a half, hour or so, let's take our mind off of current situations going on in the military world, and let's go back 80 years and just kind of relax a little bit, and let's talk about what we're all here to listen to, and that's World War II-based content. And joining us, as always, is Henry Sledge, and we have a guest tonight. I will allow Henry to introduce him, but Henry, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing okay. Not functioning on as much sleep as I would have normally had. I had to get my son to football practice really early this morning, but I'm doing good.
Football practice already?
It's spring training.
Prior to school?
Yeah. I had to get him there at 0600 this morning.
Wow. So.
And his first mountain bike race over the weekend. So, you know.
I saw that. That's fantastic. We'll have to get into that a little bit later. I don't want to leave our guest hanging out in the wings too long. So go ahead and introduce our guest, and we'll get going.
Okay. Well, we've got a great guest tonight on What's a Scuttlebutt podcast, folks. His name is Dave Holland. He is originally from the United States, but has resided in Australia for the past 28 years. Dave served 8 years in the United States Marine Corps in infantry. From 2009 to 2013, he visited Guadalcanal a number of times, and from 2018 to 2020, he lived there full-time. He is a Guadalcanal battlefield guide and a member of several Solomon Islands battle conservation groups. Dave has assisted a number of authors and researchers with Guadalcanal material, and Dave Holland is currently working on a book featuring his time walking and researching the Guadalcanal battlefields. He also runs the YouTube and Facebook sites titled Guadalcanal Walking a Battlefield. So my buddy, my fellow Alabamian, Dave Holland, how are you tonight?
Yeah, not too bad. In Australia, it's in the afternoon. And I know why they in Alabama, being from Alabama, I fully understand why they do football practice, you know, preschool. Very serious.
Yeah.
I try to tell people that here and they go, what do you mean? Yeah. Mm. But I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on, you and Don both.
Well, I imagine getting the kids used to starting football practice so early is probably advantageous in the summertime when the heat's extraordinary and the humidity's through the roof. So it probably is best to get them used to that early morning run, and the parents too.
Yeah, they go 2 days. I remember them in Alabama in the heat in August. Go 2 days in the morning and the afternoon. Yes.
Well, Dave had a really good show on World War II TV. He's been on twice, and I really enjoyed the Chesty Puller show a few days ago. So, and that, Don, you know, it's prophetic that what last week with Preston Stewart, we were talking about Chesty, and I was thinking about that. I'm like, man, too bad Dave couldn't be a part of this conversation.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that, what we were talking about, what I was reading from the Peleliu Tragic Triumph book and some of the opinions they were posting in there about Chesty Puller and how I kind of made the comparison to some of the ways that people felt that Patton tend to have a little bit of a glory hound role, and kind of how in the PTO, at least, that Chesty Puller filled that position for, at least as the media was concerned, they wanted that news hound kind of headline guy, and he filled that role pretty well, at least according to some of the opinions in that book.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dave, just one of the things we like to do when we first have people on the show, obviously, Henry just gave us the rundown, but if you want to just give us a little bit of background, maybe skip ahead to what got you to make that move to the Guadalcanal area and the Solomon Islands, and how you got so heavily invested in the history of Guadalcanal?
Oh, yeah, that's probably a good question. I work for the Australian government, so being in Australia, they obviously have an interest in the South Pacific, and in Guadalcanal and the Solomon Islands in general. So I had the opportunity to travel there on a number of times through work, which is great. You know, didn't come out of my pocket, so to speak.
Those are the best trips.
Best trips, yes. Being a former Marine and being a military history nut, you know, I was in my element on Guadalcanal, and I thought, well, you know, my short trips there, I used to do as much out of work time as I could, exploring the battlefield and taking people on battlefields and giving battlefield studies and things like that. I mean, even when the Australian Army was over there, I used to give these called battlefield studies, and we used to have the NCOs and officers, we'd run them through terrain appreciations and analysis, and, you know, what would they do in their if they had the same situation. So I'd run a few of them. And then in 2018, I got a full 2-year deployment to the Solomon Islands. So I was going to take my time there, and I thought, well, I'll really, really drill down on the things that it needed to be drilled down on. I mean, because a lot of people who they go to Guadalcanal, they'll go for a week-long tour in the tour groups, and they hit the main areas like Bloody Ridge, and, you know, they go to Tulagi and Alligator Creek, but they miss some of the off-the-tour spots. They're very, very important in the campaign. So it allowed me time to really drill down in those spots that people don't get to visit. And in all my free time I was over there, I spent, and even during my work time, I got to spend a bit of time doing it because my commanders and my bosses over there was pretty good. I mean, every time we have VIPs or would come through in through the Australian government and even in the U.S. government, I was the man who would take them around. So I was doing that in my work time too. So it was almost like my government job was my secondary employment.
Would these people you were taking around, Dave, did they like have a pretty good basis of knowledge of the campaign, and they gave you a list of places they wanted to see, or were they just handed over to you and you were told, hey, show these people the iconic sites of Guadalcanal? How did that usually play out?
The VIP trips, yes. It would generally, you know, I don't know if you've done a VIP trip. It's like, we've got some spare time. This person's a government official or say U.S. officer that may have a general interest in Guadalcanal. And generally, I didn't say too many or drill down deep and want to know the full details. I did take the Australian Prime Minister and his wife around, and they had a good interest in it, even though there's no Australians at Guadalcanal. You know, they asked the right pertinent questions.
Well, it was hugely relevant for them, you know.
Oh, yes. At the same time, you know, they were fighting. You know, Guadalcanal and the Americans had the right hand and the left hand at the same time. The Americans and the Australians were on Kokoda and Papua New Guinea. So they were heavily involved in Papua New Guinea. I took a lot of people around on tours there, and I did have some, I would consider hardcore tourists. Mm-hmm. People would actually would travel over there just for to spend the time and delved in a lot of information. I had a big background on Guadalcanal. So, but when you have big groups, you know, you cater to all types. You have some that have a general interest, and some have a real deep, keen interest. So when you take a group out, the first thing you do is just make an assessment of, cater to your audience and see who you're dealing with, and then go from there.
All right.
When it comes to some of those spots you were talking about earlier about, you know, everybody goes to the normal areas that we've all read about, but you want to try to fill in the voids, if you will, and some of those combat, some of those engagements and areas that people know less about. If you had to think of a handful of those, which one do you, I don't want to say enjoy, it's, using the word enjoy when it comes to talking about combat, it's a little rough, but out of those spots that you feel don't get enough notice and spotlight shine on them, which one do you enjoy the most taking people to, and that you would want to share with our audience to kind of get people to realize, you know, it's this particular location is just as important as all the rest of them?
Yes, I mean, there's a number of them, but one in particular is a place called Coffin Corner. Now, Coffin Corner was involved from the 24th to the 27th of October. It was considered part of the Battle over Henderson Field. And Coffin Corner was probably the most concentrated site of three main Japanese assaults throughout the campaign. It was the largest Japanese assault site. And a lot of people don't even know about Coffin Corner. I mean, they know, like, John Bassalone was involved in that, probably of, I'd say, 600 or 700 yards away. But the rest of his battalion in the U.S. Army, the 164th Regiment, you know, they became very instrumental in stopping the Japanese. And I'd go as far as to say Coffin Corner was the last Japanese offensive attack in the Pacific theater in World War II. I mean, you had some bonsai attacks later, obviously, in other campaigns, but they were bonsai attacks when the concentrated offensive attacks. The Japanese on Guadalcanal was on the offensive. And they wasn't on the defensive. It was only until the January battles in the U.S. Army involving Mount Austin, where we know as the Thin Red Line in the movies and books, they became on the defensive. But they were only just standing by to the rest of the guys could come over and go on offensive again. So to answer the original question, Coffin Corner. And it's the only place on Guadalcanal that I've been that it kind of makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck. I mean, because the Japanese were pushing into a small track called the Jeep Trail there, and they concentrated their attacks because it was the only trail that would go through the jungle, and it would link up to a place called Fighter Airstrip Number 1. So there was an auxiliary field for Henderson Field. So they concentrated their attacks at the corner of the jungle in Coffin Corner, and they had a Marine who basically said, if he was a coffin maker, he'd be a millionaire.
Wow.